The following program is brought to you by Podcast One. Recorded live backstage, this is Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Now here's your host, Rory O'Malley.
Hey there, welcome to the Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. I'm your host, Rory O'Malley. Thank you so much for listening. Our guest this week is Jen Colella, who is currently starring on Broadway in Come From Away. She was nominated for a Tony for her performance in this wonderful musical about what happened in Gander, Newfoundland, the day after 9/11, when dozens of planes were stranded with their passengers on this small town. And it's an incredible performance. It's a wonderful show. I have known Jen for a long time, and she has such a great story. I was really excited to get to speak with her. Here's my conversation with Jen Colella. Hi, Jen.
Hi, my love.
I am so excited to talk with you on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted today, because we've known each other for quite some time.
We sure have.
Do you remember how we met?
Will you remind me?
I will.
The exact moment?
I will.
It was through the Book of Mormon crowd, right? No,
it was, but it was even before that. You did a reading of Happy Days the Musical at...
Sorry.
Please, all the words.
Please, Steve.
Okay, all the words,
I don't know.
Are fine.
Yeah, I don't know what the rules are.
Okay. No rules.
Of course.
Yes.
I was prior. Oh, yes.
Now, see, I knew I had seen you on Broadway in Urban Cowboy. I was like so excited to get to work with you for like a day. I think we ran through the show for like 2 days or something. You played Pinky Tuscadero in Happy Days the Musical for Mr. Gary Marshall in Burbank, California. And you were amazing and awesome.
You're so sweet, dude.
And we got to like hang out. I was so starstruck getting to perform with you for a day.
I felt the same way. That was quite a remarkable experience working with him and putting that sweet show together. I thought it was awesome.
Yes. Yeah. You went on to do more Broadway shows, and I stuck with Happy Days the Musical at Regional Theater for about four more years.
Yes.
That was my path.
Show. I loved it.
It was sweet. There was a lot of nostalgia and a lot of great people, but it was awesome because it really introduced me to so many people in the industry early on in my career, and you are one of them. And I have just always thought so highly of you because you are so laid back and chill, at least to me. You know, like there are so many actors where we're just like over the top and crazy and self-obsessed, you know, and you can bring a lot of nervous energy into a room when you're an actor like that. And from the moment I met you, you were like, hey, we're going to sing about Happy Days. This is going to be fun, you know?
That feels so nice to hear, because sometimes I don't feel as chill and laid back as I would like to be. So that feels nice. That feels really nice to hear. Thank you for reflecting that.
Of course. Nice. So let's start from right now. You're currently on Broadway in Come From Away.
Mm-hmm.
I had the pleasure of seeing you in this show in May. And I don't know if Chad Kimball was supposed to get a word to you that I had come to the show. I came with like five family members, and I was like, I am not going to bring them backstage to make them go through
you
the tour.
You certainly could have. That would have been any time, my friend. Of course you could have.
I know. I absolutely could have, but you don't know my family.
Okay.
But no. They're lovely and wonderful.
Fair enough. Okay.
It was an awesome experience, because I have waited for 2 years to see the show. I had made a trip to New York probably like twice before that. And both times, I do this little trick when I'm in New York by myself. I go up to a ticket booth and I say, one please, like right before the show. And then I always think I can get into any show I want if I go by myself. Mm-hmm. I could not do that with you guys. You were so sold out. I could not get a ticket. So I was denied twice. And so I finally was like, okay, I'm going to make a plan. I'm going to be responsible. And I came with my family. And I truly felt like it was seeing it in the first month of the show. You and so many of the cast members who created these parts were in the show and absolutely phenomenal. And that's hard to do because you're, what, 2 years into the run now?
Well, 2 years, we're in our third year of our Broadway run.
Wow.
But we're in like our fifth year of the run of its entirety. Last night was my 1,105th show.
Oh my God.
Isn't that awesome?
It is awesome. That is a huge accomplishment.
Thank you. It feels like that. It's such a cool new muscle for me to strengthen. Because as you know, a lot of shows that I've done have closed pretty quickly. If Then ran for about a year, that was a nice healthy run, but a lot of them closed really quickly. And while that has certainly strengthened my sense of gratitude around any show ever, this newfound experience of being in a hit show that's running for a long time and coming in every night and making it new and still having a deep curiosity for it and the roles that I play, it's quite humbling. It's been really an extraordinary journey.
And a journey that includes a Tony nomination for you, which is so, so well deserved. You play Beverly, the first female captain of an American Airlines flight crew. And mm-hmm. You have a song, Me and the Sky, and it's you all are amazing on that stage, but you just have such a wonderful standout performance. And I'm so glad you got recognized for it, because you're still just hitting it out of the park.
Thanks, buddy.
2.5 years in when I saw it.
Thank you, brother.
What's it like bringing a real person to life on this stage?
It's a trip, especially when she's there. You know, she was there a lot at the beginning.
Really?
Captain Bass has seen the show over 100 times.
What?
That's right. That's exactly right.
I mean, if there was a character of Rory O'Malley, you know, being badass and awesome on a stage,
then
would probably go more.
It, right?
Yeah.
She's been a bunch of times, over 100, and I always know when she's there. I can always feel her energy and see her in the audience. And she watches it like it is the first time she's ever seen it, just clapping and crying and so generous with her energy, with me and with all of us. It's been extraordinary. But, you know, early on, I felt a bit daunted just because I wanted to honor her. And I wanted to make sure that she felt like she was being represented in an authentic way. And she has given me copious notes. No, I'm kidding. She's only been super supportive and loving through all of the years that we've been doing it together. She's genuinely a part of the family now. So while it was a little scary and daunting at first, I really love when she comes now.
Yeah. No, I'm sure. And I think that it's probably, when you're in a long run of a show, it starts to be like you want to know if somebody's out there or if something is making that specific performance special in any way, because then it turns into a whole new show for you.
Totally. Yeah. And you kind of do the show for that person, which is quite a gift.
So the show Come From Away is about a whole fleet, basically, of planes being diverted to Gander, Newfoundland, and being deserted there, and the town of Gander coming around, all these people stranded in their town, and taking care of them, and because of 9/11. And so it is it's a show where you think, oh God, I don't know if I want to go to a 9/11 musical. How could we, you know, survive through that? But it is told in such an uplifting, beautiful way that at a time we need some more hope in humanity, this is probably the piece of art that has made me the cynical side of me that has been motivated so much by everything in the news, this has made me the most optimistic about our chances of survival.
Awesome. That makes me so happy. And that's exactly right. I mean, they, you know, the producers and the writers like to call it a 9/12 musical because it's about the days following that awful tragedy. And I find it still quite cathartic for those of us who, you know, remember 9/11, who were around, and it gives another memory of that day that isn't so horrific. And it's rather one of kindness and people looking out for one another. And then you're right. For right now, it reminds us that people are good at heart. People are good at heart. We're not losing humanity. People aren't turning evil. Like, we're all good at heart. We just need to be more in the practice of it and to be reminded of that. And this show is doing that. I think it's still doing that. It feels like it is.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
that you know, that's all we ever want. Like, we like to be entertainers, and we like to have like something fun for people to escape to every night. But if you can also give people hope, like you just said, or have a moment that feels cathartic and healing, like that for me is what's kept 9 of the original 12 cast members still there for so long.
That is a huge deal. I don't think people realize how rare that is. 9 of the 12 original cast members are still up on that stage. I mean,
Absolutely.
that shows a commitment to the piece and a love for it. And because you all have, when I watch it, I think as an actor, I go, wow, this was a lot of work. I keep thinking about your blocking rehearsals when you are all playing so many different characters and you have to keep that all in, you know, who are you right now? Where are you standing? Who's in this chair? Where, how do we get this chair over there? You make it look so fluid and easy, but you were there while you were blocking, and your director, who won the Tony Award for directing, Christopher Ashley, he is telling you his vision. What was that rehearsal process like?
Well, you know, the chairs are actually the toughest thing to learn, because if you miss one chair, or if it's slightly off of a spike mark, then you have just ruined a sequence of events for the next several scenes, you know? And it has to happen quite seamlessly. So for us now, it's in our body. We made sure early on that obviously the chairs were in place in our minds, but then the characters. Once you put, for me, I'll speak for myself, once I put a character into my body and I have a different center of gravity, and then obviously the accents help, once I slip into that, now it's just second nature. It just feels so easy. And that's kind of where we get to show off a little bit how quickly we can switch back and forth from the characters. But I am always reminded when we have put in or a standby comes on just how extraordinary their brains are, because they haven't just learned one character's set of chairs and vocal parts and lines. They've learned five, which is mind-boggling to me. We have the most extraordinary standbys ever, and it's never an issue. It's never not like, ooh, so-and-so's on. We see that someone else is on, and it's like, fabulous, fantastic. We have complete faith in them, and I do not know how they do it, because it was not a joke. So to answer your question, when we first started in the process of like the chairs and everything, Chris and Kelly Devine, our choreographer, really worked in tandem to make sure that it felt very natural and that it was all very sharp. We joke a lot about Kelly realizing pretty quickly that we weren't a troupe of dancers. And she's such an extraordinary dancer and choreographer that she had to learn early on that she had to fit something to our bodies. And I think it turned out pretty well for her. I mean, she also got a Tony nomination. She won the Olivier for her work in London for the show. And it turned into something quite unique. And now that we've learned it and it's in our bodies, we all feel very, very proud of it.
Yeah, her work is stellar. And even though it's not choreography in the sense of the word that we think of when we think of dancing, it is, the whole thing is a dance. Every
That's right.
single moment is a dance, and you guys are dancers, damn it.
That's right. That's right. We just had a brush up rehearsal the other day, and Ricky Hines, our dance associate, he's genius, and he's always like, come from away dancers. He always refers to us as come from away dancers, which we love. We got a Cheetah Rivera Award nomination, and just probably more proud of that than any of the noms that came in during that season. We're all so proud of it.
Well, it's a very unique show. There's really not many things done like this, and it is so successful in telling what could be a really tricky story. And I think it's because you guys are such phenomenal actors who can sing and dance, but you're a troupe of actors who are telling a story with minimal costume changes. It is really about you and the world that you create with your voices. And, you know, to me, that is when you strip everything down and it's just about the actor telling a story, that's when theater is the most magical. So I think it's a fantastic, fantastic show. And it's a hit. So it's going to be around for a long time, traveling the
Yay!
World. What one thing, though, that I think is when it's something that's real and you're, you know, of course, you have this wonderful character of Beverly and it's an exciting story and she has such a wonderful life story. But you also are dealing with characters, some of them based on real people, some of them actual real people, who aren't showing them their best selves all the time.
Mm-hmm.
How
mm-hmm.
did you deal with those realities? And because you're meeting the people of Gander, and, you know, was there anything that was uncomfortable in telling those harder parts of the story?
Well, I mean, the cool thing is that the people of Gander represented themselves with absolute grace and dignity and integrity the entire time.
Right.
So I think knowing from just speaking with a couple of Newfoundlanders, they were a little trepidatious because they thought maybe they might be made fun of.
Sure.
They're sometimes the butt of the joke in Canada because they're so far out there and it's so remote and they're kind of, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
they're the country folk, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think they were a little concerned about that. But when we did a concert version for them in Gander, thousands of people came and
wow.
they loved it, Rory. The first time we sang I'm an Islander in the opening number, they jumped to their feet and started like screaming and clapping, and we all just lost it. Like we all just immediately started crying, and
yeah.
and each character whom they know, Claude the Mayor and, you know, Beulah and all these people whom they know and love very dearly, got entrance applause. And like they, from what we have gathered and what any Newfoundlander has told us, feel very well represented. So that has not been difficult at all.
Yeah.
There are a couple of moments with Captain Bass, like there's a moment that I have with a Muslim man,
right?
That was hard for her to see on stage. That
yeah.
part for her is hard. I think one of the Kevins wasn't sure about coming to see the show for a while at the beginning because they really did break up and it was a little painful for him. But he ended up coming and feeling very well represented and supported. Like, we haven't had any negative feedback where someone's like, that's not how it was,
right.
or how dare you present it in this way. Our writers, David and Irene, were very, very careful about telling the truth and about doing so with respect to these
right.
people.
I have chills thinking about that concert version in Newfoundland. That
would
oh
my
be
goodness.
Extraordinary. I mean, like these people living in Gander watching a musical about their the post office guy, you know, like it's
I know
it was blown their minds.
I mean, Oz made Gino Carr like an honorary police officer. Like,
oh my God.
You know, we met all of, we saw all of the places. We went to all of the places. It was I'll never ever forget that trip and that particular experience for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Well, and that is why so many of you have stayed with the show and treat it with the respect that it mm-hmm. deserves, the story, you know, that you know mm-hmm. the people who you're inhabiting on that stage. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about you and where you come from. You come from the South, right?
I do.
From
yes,
South Carolina?
I'm from South Carolina. That's exactly right. I was born in Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
Raised in Somerville, South Carolina, which is just outside of Charleston, and kind of in Somerville and Hilton Head Island. And my entire family's on Hilton Head now. So
wow.
when I go home, that's where I go. Yeah.
Beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you grow up doing theater and singing?
You know, there wasn't a great deal of theater. And so I would try to find it where I could. I was a big choir nerd, happily. And
lovely.
I just sang in like, school choir and show choir and concert choir and, sang in church choir, like anywhere I could sing in a choir, I wanted to be a part of it.
Okay, but you have such a big voice. Like, were you like what were you singing, soprano, or they just
so
had
funny.
You belt one out?
Yeah, Jason Robert Brown and I are working on a concert together right now, and he reminded me of a time when he told me that I should not be in the ensemble. He's like, you're not meant to be in the ensemble. You don't. I'm so loud. It's so piercing. I know. I think choir was good for me because it helped me blend.
Sure.
But I'm still working on that. But yes, I was a first soprano most of the time. And then I have these images of me like in choir in college, literally sneaking on the bleachers to the alto section because I wanted to learn how to harmonize and knew that I had this high voice, but I wanted to be in the alto section because I thought it would strengthen my sight reading abilities and my ability to harmonize. And, wow. And it did. I mean, everything about choir, was just an astounding foundation for me, for music, for sure.
Yeah. And so you went into theater when you went to college?
Yeah, there was a woman who like taught drama out of her garage and who like rehearsed plays in her garage, and then was this group called the Somerville Players, and so I was with them for a little bit before college, but it really wasn't until college that I started to kind of augment skills that I had, you know, and,
yeah.
And really hone in on like what it meant to study acting for sure. It wasn't until college.
And after college, did you move to New York or to Los Angeles?
No, I actually went to, so for 3 years after undergrad, I worked in one of the only professional theaters at the time, Trustus Theater in Columbia, South Carolina.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I was a company member there, and it was beautiful, incredible place. It still is. It did theater that other people in South Carolina weren't touching. Nikki Silver and Tony Kushner and things that were a little more subversive that and evocative that
right.
other theaters were scared of. And so it was a wonderful training ground for me. And I was also in a rock band during that time.
Oh.
I always joke, that's where I learned how to belt through whiskey. So I was like working in this theater and then in this rock band. And I was also a senior supervisor for the National Call Center for Colonial Life and Accident Insurance Company.
Oh, okay.
So I would like put on a suit and I was like this manager throughout the day. And then I'd run to the theater to do a show. And then I'd put on some leather pants and be a rock star for like 3 years before I went to graduate school at the University of California at Irvine. And that's what brought me to California.
I see. Okay. So you were out doing grad school for acting?
Yes. I got my master's in acting.
And
it was a three-year program.
And you did some comedy as well. Is that right?
I did. Yep. I was in Los Angeles out of grad school, and I was a regular at the Laugh Factory and the Comedy Store there in Hollywood.
That is wild. I did not know that until I started doing some research. And I mean, that is the scary, like, you know, people say that being on Broadway or singing on a stage is scary, but, you know, you got the notes given to you, you've got writers handing
yes.
you, like, the good material or whatever. At least you didn't write it, you know, even if it's
yeah,
bad.
Totally.
But when you
totally.
Go up on a stage as a stand-up comedian, it's mm-hmm. you. You are completely
right.
in charge. How did you do that? I mean, that is so scary to me.
Well, you're exactly right. It was scary to me, which is kind of why I wanted to do it. You're right. You have no one else to blame. It's your mm-hmm. material. It's your delivery of that material.
Right.
And I think the thing that I found most valuable from that entire experience was that if I failed on stage with no one else to blame, that I could actually get the audience back in the next breath. They would laugh again. And mm-hmm. I realized that you could fail miserably on stage and that the world kept spinning.
Right.
So it gave me this sense of courage, this sense of like, oh, it's all fine. Yes, you can fail and then still get them back. It doesn't
That's
mean
so
the world crumbles around you.
Yeah.
And I found that I still find that to be very valuable to
yeah.
this day.
That's a great lesson to learn, especially because we rehearse everything on stage for a play mm-hmm. so much. So if the smallest thing goes wrong, we can panic or think, you know, what's the worst that can happen? I worked with a comedian who directed a play I was in, and he said, if it was just right after I graduated college, he said, if something goes wrong, point it out and make fun of the other actor. And I was like, what? We did not learn that at drama school. That is not how it works.
That is not what we learned,
yeah,
sir.
But he was like, you're in a comedy. Like, don't pretend like the world isn't alive on stage. Like, right. What are we here for? And I loved getting that perspective from him. So that must be, mm-hmm. he learned the lesson that you did, that the world keeps spinning even if something mm-hmm. goes wrong. I love
Absolutely.
That. So yep. how did you end up back in New York and doing Broadway?
When I was finishing my master's degree, we had a showcase. Our showcase was with NYU and Yale. And we had one in New York and one in LA for various casting directors and agents. And when we were in New York, Jay Bender's office called me in for Urban Cowboy. Wow. And so I auditioned. And I didn't get it. They called me back a couple times. I didn't get it. And so I went back to LA and set up shop there and started doing stand-up. And several months went by. And then I got a call. And my agent was like, hey, do you remember that Urban Cowboy audition? I said, yeah, I didn't get that. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah.
She was like, no. They have been in rehearsal for a few weeks, but their director has suddenly passed away, Phil Osterman. And they have a new director on board, Lonnie Price, and he has an entirely new vision for what the leading lady should be. And the producers are like, well, there was this girl. And so they want to fly you to New York tomorrow. And if you get it, you start the next day.
What?
I was like, yes. So they faxed me the sides, Rory. That's how long ago this was.
Yeah, I remember those
17
days.
17 years ago. They faxed me the sides, flew me first class. I'd never been in first class before. I'm like learning everything on the plane. And I had this huge audition to be the lead of a first Broadway show.
Oh my God.
I can remember like having my audition, Lonnie Price's sweet face looking at me across the table. And then I finished and he said, okay, we need you to leave the room so we can talk about you for a moment.
Huh.
And I, as I was walking out, I thought, oh my goodness, my whole life could change in this instant. And no sooner had that thought like entered my heart, he called me back in the room. He was like, we want you to be our leading lady. Welcome to Broadway. And I just burst into tears. And Jay Bender was like, I found her. And, you know, the stage manager's like, are you Equity? And I said, nope. And he goes, you will be tomorrow morning. Like it was a whirlwind.
Wow.
It was just, and all of a sudden, you're the lead of a Broadway show.
That is crazy.
Isn't that bananas?
That is bananas. Yeah, I love Lonnie Price. I love that he's the person who is the head of that story because
he
is such a great guy.
He is responsible for my being here. He is one of my dearest friends now, and I every time I'm with him, we just had lunch a few days ago, and I was like, dude, you are the reason I'm here. Thank you so much for believing in me. We always get teary over it. You know, Jason Robert Brown was our musical director.
Right.
For that show.
That's
and Tom
right.
Kitt was his associate musical
Oh my God.
So that's how I met all of these people.
And I was an audience member.
I
loved it. I remember, I think Tyler Haynes was in the ensemble and I went
sure
to college
was.
With him and, mm-hmm. No, I still remember Matt Cavanaugh walking past me down the aisle at the beginning, and I went, I love this show.
Right? So many beautiful people. It was
oh, my
so
God.
So many of our Broadway debuts.
Yeah.
More than half of the cast, it was our Broadway debut.
Yeah.
I'm friends with many, many people. Very, very close friends with many people from that experience. It was truly extraordinary.
Yeah. So you moved to New York, you have your Broadway debut, get your Equity card.
And
you're like thrown into that whole world. And so once Urban Cowboy closes, was your first thought like, well, that was fun, I'm going to go back to LA, or did you just have...
Well, I didn't even know a show could close that quickly, Rory. I didn't know that was a possibility.
Right.
I signed a year contract. I was like, wait, what? I just didn't know.
How quick was it?
Well, when we opened, we got bad reviews, and I didn't know the whole thing about if you're at an opening night party, the reviews start to come in, all of a sudden the party's over.
Right.
I just didn't catch why that what that was happening.
Sure.
And so the next day we arrive and everyone's dour. And I was like, what's the mood? What's going on? And there's a meeting on stage. And I was like, what's happening? And it was the very next day that our producer told us we were closing that weekend.
Oh, wow.
And I just didn't know that was a possibility.
Yeah.
It never entered my sweet little young brain.
Yeah.
And what happened was that Sunday night we were supposed to close, Lonnie Price came out on stage to make a speech at the end of the show, listed every single person's name in the theater.
Wow.
From like spot ops to everyone on stage, to thank them and to say something specific about each one of them. And then he said, and I've just been informed by our producers that we will not be closing tonight. We're staying open. And the place erupted like we had won the World Series. There was Bernadette Peters Gypsy was right next door. We were at the Broadhurst. They were right next door. And
right.
They said they could hear the eruption.
Oh, my God.
Like, it was just a celebration. And so we stayed open for another, I think, 3 or 4 months to get through the Tonys. And,
right.
You know, JRB was nominated. And there was, you know, we wanted to stay open a little bit longer. And
yeah.
So they did. It was remarkable. So then, yes. So then it closed and I was like, okay, so now I get to like see what's what. Like I got a catering job and, you know, was like, I'm definitely going to put food on the table and
yeah.
do that. And then interestingly enough, the very next musical I was cast in, the woman whom I replaced, her name is Caroline McMahon, whom I thought of every day. She and I played sisters in this
wow.
beautiful musical called Heartland.
Wow.
That Susan Shulman directed. And now she's one of my best friends in the world because we got to like spend this beautiful time together after she had lost this job that I got.
That's
life changing for me.
Yeah.
Isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah. Yeah, that is extraordinary because a lot of times, if you're in the position that you were in, you might give that person a lot of space for the rest of your life. You know, like,
yes,
you
well,
know, like.
Yeah, well, she was the one who was so sweet. I mean, first of all, I wanted to talk about her a lot in the cast. The cast loved her. And so I made sure that we brought her up every day and that she was still very much a part because her vibration, her energy was still in that role and
yeah.
in the company. So I didn't want to pretend like she hadn't been there.
Right.
And then she came to see the show and reached out to me and was like, you are tremendous. It was her being so sweet and loving
wow.
to me that made going in and playing her sister such a wonderful experience. She's a doll.
It's a tricky thing because we've all, if you're around long enough in this business, you're going to be on either side of that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's hard because it's not either of the actor's fault that, you
That's
know,
right.
that person would make you feel uncomfortable, you know, to like
mm-hmm.
be the person who took away a job. It's not, that is not what it is. It's,
nope.
that's, and it takes a while to realize that, but clearly she is a very centered human being.
She's extraordinary. She's one of my dearest friends to this day.
I love that. So, mm-hmm. so you went on and you did Heartland pretty much right after Urban Cowboy?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It was very, very soon after. And yeah, I was lucky. I've been very, very lucky to work pretty consistently. When I'm not working, I teach. And I still teach when I am working. I teach a lot of master classes for various programs.
Right.
I've taught at NYU and Juilliard and Yale and all around the U.S. Teaching to me is something that I feel just as passionate about.
Really? What do you get out of it?
Well, you know, it feels very symbiotic. If I teach a masterclass during the day and I'm on stage at night, I am a better actor because I have brought myself back to the basics.
Right.
And it's just such a wonderful reminder. And I don't know, I love the classroom spirit, the energy, the like trusting one another, the freedom to like fail and succeed and share your heart and put your heart into your work.
Yeah.
So much of what I teach isn't really about acting. It's about kindness and gratitude and how that serves us as people and how that will then inform your art. And I don't know. I love it. It really helps me be a better person.
It certainly makes it easier to do show number 1,178 when you're teaching
right.
kids who are desperately wanting to do what you do.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, Rory.
Yeah. I anytime I've had the opportunity to work with young people who were me, you know, who I can see myself, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I'm doing it. This is, it's happening right now.
Yes.
This thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet you're a great teacher, man.
Well, I'm all right. I'm all right. I definitely enjoy it. And I worked with a kid last year who was incredibly talented and singing a very sad song. And he started, I had him do it again, and I kind of like gave him some thoughts, and he started crying. And I went, oh no, I don't know if I can do this. This young kid is too good, you know, and it's, you know, bringing him to a vulnerable place like that. I was like, wow, this is a lot. He got way better than I am just now. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, no, you bring up a good point. There's a lot of responsibility that comes with being, acting teacher, because you're dealing with emotion and with personal experience. You have to, if you're going to help them bring their deepest performances out, right?
Yeah.
So yes, it can be scary the first time,
yeah,
like someone opens up in that way and you're like, I've done this, oh god,
yeah,
and wow, they're much better than I ever will be. Yes that happens all the time, and it's beautiful.
Yeah,
I love it.
Or having a 11-year-old girl sing Burn from Hamilton. And I go, do you have anything else? Because I don't want to talk about what this song means with you. You're 11.
That's hilarious. What can you imagine?
Yeah.
What is it? What are your circumstances that you can put into place to sing this song? That's
exactly.
Hilarious.
And we can't replace this with, you know, a fight with a friend. This is too
we
heavy.
We sure can't.
But no, you know, it's definitely taught me a lot.
It's really funny, right?
So you went on to do, you had said, especially now that you're in a show that's such a huge success and running for a long, long time, you did other shows that weren't as long. The times are changing. Was that one ran for quite some time though? I saw that one.
Well,
I loved that show.
Yeah, I was a part of that show in at the Old Globe in San Diego.
Oh, I see.
And it was me and Michael Arden were the
leads,
and that was incredible because I was the lead of a Twilight LARP show, and I am not a dancer, so I had to do it.
Look, if we come away from anything with this podcast, it's that you are a dancer, Jen, okay? Stop denying it.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, thank you. God, I'm a dancer. Okay, so right after that, I actually didn't do that show and did High Fidelity on Broadway. That's the show that Tom Kitt wrote, and I met him through Urban Cowboy, and he was like, I'm writing the show, and we don't know anything about it, except we want you to be the lead. And I was like, well, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So finally, High Fidelity arrives, and that was only on Broadway for 2 weeks.
Right.
2 weeks. And it was devastating.
Yeah.
Again, just like, oh my God. And I loved it. And I loved him so much, and Amanda Green and, you know, Will Chase, all those people. We felt so in love with each other and in love with that music. But the good thing about that one is, rather than staying open for longer, we closed and made an album.
Right.
And we are all still to this day so very, very proud of that album. I just think Tom Kitt's music is extraordinary. I think Amanda Green's one of the best lyricists out there.
Yeah.
And we're super proud that we have that.
Yeah,
that
you're
show.
Right. You know, like if a show doesn't have a cast recording, it's so hard. It's so hard because it's, you know, that's how it lives on.
That's right.
And that moment in time, that cast coming together. So if you don't have
that's right.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I have a lot of shows that never, you know, that didn't get to Broadway and that they don't have cast recordings. And I'm like, it was great. I mean, it's just sheet music now, but you have no way to like really prove that.
Yeah, isn't that sweet? It's so like, just gone. Just like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's the difference between theater and TV and film. That's what makes it special,
though.
You were also in another Tom Kitt production, If Then.
That's right.
And you played a lesbian character in this.
I did.
And that really meant a lot to you. right? Mm-hmm. I've heard
it
you
sure
talk.
Did.
Like, what did it mean to be a part of the LGBT community on stage playing a character?
You know, it was beautiful and awesome. And prior to that, I had the opportunity. The first time I was actually a gay character on stage was for the Bebo Brinker Chronicles, which is a play off Broadway, mm-hmm. Directed by Lee Silverman. And I wasn't quite out yet. And I decided during that process that I wanted to be out. And so by the time I got to If Then, and they created that character for me, I was just so thrilled to have the opportunity to be on a stage and to be in musical theater where I loved. And I didn't realize until I played these roles as a gay woman, how much it means to the gay community.
Right.
And to young actors who are gay and don't maybe not have a lot of lesbian representation in theater.
Right.
That was an extra added bonus that still happens to this day. People will come up to me and be like, thank you for being out and thank you for playing these characters on stage, because I didn't have anybody else to look to, and that means the world to me. I just didn't even know that was part of the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I played a gay character in Book of Mormon, and without mm-hmm. a doubt, 95% of mm-hmm. the letters to the theater were from mm-hmm. young girls who were lesbians who were coming out. And I thought, oh, well, you know, little gay boys love musical theater, so they're but the truth is that young women love musicals. Mm-hmm. They are the majority of the people who are
That's
buying
right.
the tickets, right? And
That's right.
so to have lesbian representation on a stage is so mm-hmm. important. And I can only imagine how much you being open about who you are and getting to play that on stage
It's been
meant
a dream. It was a dream. It was an absolute dream in every way. LaShawn's is a dream. Dean is a dream. Anytime I can sing any song that Tom Kitt writes is a dream. It was awesome. Really, really awesome.
I'm so inspired by who you are. Clearly from our days at Happy Days, the workshop reading that we did, you have such an enthusiasm and joy in the work and in life and who you are. And it's why I think that we have a lot of the same friends, and I know how much mm-hmm. they adore you. And I certainly hope that we get to be on stage together one day, get to play in the same sandbox again.
It would be my honor, my friend. I think the same of you. Thank you so much for your kindness and your generosity and for wanting to spend time with me this afternoon.
Of course, it
feels amazing. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Thank you when you have a show mm-hmm. tonight and a big weekend. So say, give my love to the rest of the cast. I think what you guys are doing on that stage is extraordinary, and it's truly appreciated by everyone.
Thank you, my brother.
That was Jen Colella. Thank you so much for listening. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review to the Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, brought to you by Podcast One.
Thanks for listening to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Be sure to download new episodes every month right here on Podcast One, on the Podcast One app, or on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to rate, review, and share.